On this Sunday night, anger and unrest. Hundreds arrested during violent protests over the police killings of black men in Minnesota and Louisiana. While 3 days after the Dallas sniper ambush, the president says any violence against the police is reprehensible. Behind the attack, the chilling new details of how the Dallas shooter planned and trained for his attack, how it could have been much worse, and the message he left in his own blood. Air scare, what caused passengers to get sick on a flight from Atlanta to Denver, forcing the plane to divert and make an early landing. War crime, Richard Engel tonight on an American reporter killed in Syria. Her family now suing the Assad regime, saying she was targeted and murdered. And survivor story, she was shot by the Dallas sniper as she tried to escape with her children. Tonight, she thanks the police and the Good Samaritan who saved her family. Nightly news begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. As we come on the air tonight, police officers in several cities across the country are preparing for another night of protests. On Saturday, some demonstrations turned violent and authorities made arrests, including detaining a prominent leader in the Black Lives Matter movement. The president weighed in again today on what he called a difficult week, asking all sides for mutual respect moving forward. But tensions are high as we learn more about the man who targeted police officers in Dallas. We begin tonight with the continuing protests over the police shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota. Blake McCoy starts us off from St. Paul.
Despite more than a dozen warnings to leave, they remain defiant. Protesters marching onto I-94, the main freeway connecting Minneapolis to St. Paul. Police say protesters hurled rocks, glass bottles, a firework, even a Molotov cocktail, injuring 21 officers, none seriously. Police responded with smoke and tear gas to disperse the crowd, eventually making more than 100 arrests. The hours-long showdown is the most tense we've seen so far in Minnesota, where the police shooting of Philando Castile last week and video streamed live to Facebook showing the aftermath has sparked public outcry. In Baton Rouge, Louisiana, protesters taunted police for a second night. One officer had teeth knocked out when he was hit by a projectile. More than 100 arrests as they marched for Alton Sterling, another black man killed by police. Among those arrested for blocking the highway, DeRay Mickison. A visible face in the Black Lives Matter movement. Today, he was freed on bond.
I remain deeply disappointed in the Baton Rouge Police Department. And I'm hopeful that the Department of Justice intervenes both in the death of Alton and with the way that they treat protesters.
Protests have spread nationwide. In New York, Chicago, and Las Vegas, streets and highways also shut down. Even in London, people rallied with the message, Black Lives Matter. At church services across the country Sunday, a time for reflection and soul searching.
To understand what black people feel, you have to be in the shoes of black people. To understand what law enforcement feels, you have to be in their shoes. That's the hard part.
Back in Minnesota today, children marching too.
Who are we?
Yes!
What do we want?
Peace!
A simple message, but no simple way to achieve it.
We have just learned that one of the police officers injured here in St. Paul last night has a broken vertebrae after police say someone dropped a concrete block on his head from a highway overpass. Minnesota's governor is calling what happened here last night a dangerous escalation. He met today privately with the head of the local NAACP and is urging calm and peace. Kate?
Blake McCoy in Minneapolis. As horrific as the attack in Dallas was, with five police officers gunned down, there were new indications today that the bloodshed might have been much worse, as officials revealed what they have learned about the gunman. Gabe Gutierrez has more on that tonight.
Today, federal investigators combed the 20-square-block crime scene in downtown Dallas as new details emerged about Micah Johnson's sinister plans, much larger than first thought.
The suspect had been practicing explosive detonations, and that the materials were such that it was large enough to have devastating effects throughout our city.
In an interview on CNN, Chief David Brown also revealed a chilling mystery. Johnson scrawled the letters RB in his own blood on the walls of the parking garage where SWAT teams had cornered him. During the two-hour standoff, Johnson taunted police negotiators and would only speak to black officers. Chief Brown said he had no choice but to use a robot-delivered bomb to kill the gunman.
We believe that we saved lives by making this decision.
Investigators are now digging through Johnson's rambling writings for more clues.
This is a person who was well-prepared, who was thinking ahead, who was talking about shoot-and-move tactics. And that's important because we had on the scene information from witnesses about shooting from different places.
At the home he shared with his mother, detectives have found a personal arsenal, and neighbors say he'd practice combat drills in his backyard.
How would you describe him?
We didn't interact a lot with him. He kind of came in and just did his thing and left.
Justin Everman runs the Academy of Combative Warrior Arts, where Johnson took classes.
He took hand-to-hand, self-defense only. And we do some ground stuff as well, but that's all he did with us.
Dallas is still on edge. On Saturday, a false alarm outside police headquarters. A threat against law enforcement, a quick response, no suspect found. Today, this city tried to find peace.
Our hearts are broken. And it doesn't matter the color of our skin, or our political party, or our denomination. Surely we can stand as one. Has got to heal.
Chief Brown said today that the gunman had apparently been planning this attack for a while, but it was the shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota that apparently caused him to fast-track his plans. The memorial behind me is growing, and tomorrow the city of Dallas plans to reopen several of the buildings that have been closed off since the shooting. Kate?
Gabe Gutierrez in Dallas tonight. Gabe, thank you. President Obama will travel to Dallas on Tuesday, where he'll speak at an interfaith memorial service. Today, he spoke again about the violence and the confrontations in this country, defending the Black Lives Matter movement and defending the police and imploring them to listen to each other. Ron Allen has more tonight.
A day set for a Spanish king and rallying U.S. troops abroad. Interrupted. President Obama again facing more questions about the criticism he too often sides with protesters and not the police.
I think what you're seeing now is part of that long-standing tradition.
Mr. Obama comparing demonstrators to civil rights and anti-war activists of the past, including Black Lives Matter, a network of mostly young activists that's gaining prominence and condemnation nationally. New York's police commissioner on Meet the Press.
Well, the reality of the Black Lives Matter movement is it is significantly focused, primarily focused on police and their efforts to portray police and the police profession in a very negative way, which is unfortunate.
While calling for mutual respect, the president had tough words for activists, warning that by attacking police,
you are doing a disservice to the cause.
Saying all protesters are not equal.
There's always going to be some folks who say things that are stupid or imprudent or overgeneralized or are harsh.
Mr. Obama continuing to try to find balance between his concerns about racial disparities in policing and support for cops on the beat.
Any violence directed at police officers is a reprehensible crime.
The president's scheduled to arrive at the White House tonight and then on to Dallas Tuesday. His Spanish hosts, mindful of what's happening in America, expressing gratitude that Mr. Obama was at least able to spend a day here. Kate?
Ron Allen, thanks. Republican presumptive nominee Donald Trump responded today to the president's claim this weekend that the country is not as racially polarized as it was in the 1960s. In a tweet, Trump said, quote, "The president thinks the nation is not as divided as people think. He is living in a world of the make-believe." To Dallas again now, as the city mourns the loss of the five officers, one police division whose men and women were on duty Thursday night is feeling an especially acute sense of loss. Three of its officers were killed. Three others were wounded. Jacob Rascone spent some time with members of the unit today.
On the outskirts of Dallas, at the Southwest Police Division, there are no words, only tears. Of the 12 officers hurt or killed, half of them were assigned here. Lauren Ahrens, Michael Krall, and Patrick Zamaripa were killed. Gretchen Rocha, Ivan Saldana, and Jorge Barrientos were injured. They were a team.
They knew each other well, and that's what makes it sting all the more because of their closeness to each other.
Major Thomas Castro was more than just their leader. He was also their friend.
They were just loved by everybody that they touched, not just here on the department, but, you know, the outcry, the outpour from the citizens.
There are no strangers here. This is their community.
Thank you, sweetheart.
These are their officers.
It's just pretty heartbreaking that, you know, these three lives were taken from here.
And so on this Sunday,
bless these officers and bless the families of those who were slain.
Church came to them.
Let all who believe say amen.
Amen.
Will this division ever be the same?
Oh, we're going to be better. We're going to be better. Because we grow from what we go through. You can either fall or you can grow. We are determined to grow.
Nearly 20 years since Southwest Division lost an officer on duty. The names and faces of the fallen never to be forgotten. Jacob Rascone, NBC News, Dallas.
Another story we're following tonight, wildfires on two fronts that have forced a large number of evacuations. In Cold Springs, Colorado, almost 1,000 people had to leave their homes as firefighters struggled to contain a 330-acre fire. While in Santa Clarita, California, roughly 2,000 people whose homes were threatened by a big brush fire there were allowed to return home today. A first-of-its-kind lawsuit was filed in federal court in Washington, D.C. this weekend against the government of Syria by the family of a celebrated American journalist who was covering the war there when she was killed 4 years ago. As our chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel reports, the family claims Marie Colvin was targeted by the Syrian regime.
With her distinctive eye patch, she lost an eye covering war in Sri Lanka.
There's mortars coming in and going out. We're basically in the middle of a firefight.
And a gravelly voice, Marie Colvin was one of the world's most famous foreign correspondents. Until she was killed in a bombing in Syria 4 years ago. Now her family is taking the Syrian regime of Bashar al-Assad to court, accusing it of committing a war crime. The unprecedented lawsuit in Washington alleges that the Syrians deliberately targeted Colvin and other journalists and murdered them.
The lawsuit is designed to seek justice for the family of Marie Colvin. It's also designed to bring out the truth, to air evidence of what happened. This has been in mystery ever since 2012.
The mystery began in February 2012 when Colvin and her photographer Paul Conroy drove into the city of Homs. Then, under ferocious attack by the Syrian government.
This morning, about 7 a.m., the shelling starts.
Colvin visited a clinic. Even the seasoned reporter was shocked by what she saw.
They're hitting civilian buildings absolutely mercilessly and without caring, and the scale of it is just shocking.
These would be among Colvin's final words. Shortly after, the makeshift media center where Colvin and a few other reporters were staying was shelled. Colvin and French photographer Remy Oschlick were killed. Conroy was injured.
As it turns out, they've been trying for quite some time to actually track us down.
The lawsuit names 9 Syrian regime officials and agents, including President Assad's younger brother Maher.
According to the lawsuit, Syrian intelligence tracked down Colvin and the other reporters by intercepting the signal from a small satellite dish they were using. A government informant confirmed the location. Then Syrian officials allegedly gave the order to attack.
Colvin's mother is determined to get justice.
This makes it accountable to some extent. That, you know, that they can't get away with it without some repercussion.
A Syrian official denied the allegation, and Syria has months to formally respond to the lawsuit. But the case already stands as a tribute to a brave reporter who dedicated her life to holding the powerful accountable and may have been murdered because of it. Richard Engel, NBC News, Istanbul.
Still ahead tonight, the medical emergency that forced a jetliner to make an unscheduled landing. Also, we'll return to Dallas for the emotional story of a woman thanking the heroes she says helped her family survive the sniper attack. Some scary moments this weekend in the air when some passengers on a Delta flight from Atlanta to Denver started to feel sick, forcing the plane to divert and land in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We get more tonight from Gadi Schwartz.
A Delta flight diverted, a dozen passengers sick. On the phone, one passenger describes the scene.
People started seeing other people freaking out. Everybody kind of just went into a panic.
The flight on its way to Denver from Atlanta, but touching down in Tulsa Saturday. Emergency crews say 12 passengers were treated for possible carbon monoxide poisoning. They all recovered, but during a long layover, frustration over a lack of answers.
So everybody's just in here quarantined, and they're not telling us anything. And it's been to the point where people, like, tensions are running high.
The Tulsa Fire Department says it's unclear where the carbon monoxide may have come from.
Whether it's something on the airplane or the airplane itself.
Delta releasing a statement saying the safety and security of our customers is top priority. For now, the plane has been taken out of service as maintenance crews search for a carbon monoxide leak on board. Gotti Schwartz, NBC News.
When we come back, we'll go to Rio, where there's a new concern less than a month before the Olympics. And in Germany, it was a performance for the record books. More than 7,500 classical musicians gathered at a soccer stadium in Frankfurt this weekend. They came from all over Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands, playing together for 45 minutes and taking the Guinness record for the biggest orchestra ever. With less than a month to go before the start of the Summer Olympics, microbiologists in Rio de Janeiro say they have detected superbacteria in waters where athletes will compete. It's yet another new concern on top of worries about the Zika virus and security at the Games. But as Miguel Almaguer reports, the city and Olympic officials say there's nothing to fear.
Renowned for its incredible raw beauty, tonight it's raw sewage tainting some of Rio's most spectacular landmarks, here in Guanabara Bay. Where sailors from around the world will soon compete, microbiologists say they've discovered a dangerous, drug-resistant superbacteria.
How dangerous are the superbacteria to humans?
We don't know the real risks to the people because we need more studies.
Experts say they believe the superbacteria entered Rio's waterways when waste was discharged from local hospitals. The International Olympic Committee says the city has worked to ensure athletes will be safe, improving the quality of water, including using eco-boats to collect waste. This as the ongoing threat of the Zika virus has prompted some athletes to skip the games.
Public health isn't the only concern here, as more than 500,000 people get set to visit Rio.
Police and firefighters here have threatened to go on strike because of budget cuts, but the government promises the games will be safe. This weekend, a show of force, troops and armored vehicles out on the streets, all part of a training exercise. 85,000 soldiers and police will soon be out to secure the games.
Rio's going to be the safest place on earth to be by August. This is an amazing place, an amazing city. I mean, every foreigner that comes here falls in love with Rio.
Tonight, the world is watching Rio, with the games just 26 days away. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Rio de Janeiro.
26 days, and up next, we go back to Dallas for one mother's remarkable story of survival. Finally tonight, we want to go back to Dallas for a story about a woman and her children who found themselves caught in the middle of the violence three nights ago. They lived through it because of the heroic actions of the police and the kindness of a stranger. And today, she thanked them. Here's Joe Fryer.
In the midst of so much loss, a story of survival emerges, one mixed with overwhelming grief.
Thinking back on it, it hurts. It really does. I'm frustrated. I'm angry. Why would he do that?
Shatanya Taylor brought four of her sons to the rally in downtown Dallas Thursday night when gunfire erupted. In front of their eyes, an officer was hit.
As he was going down, he said he has a gun. Run.
Moments later, Taylor was shot in the leg, yet somehow managed to cover her son, Andrew, as police officers shielded her.
They stayed there with us, and I saw another officer. Saw another officer get shot right there in front of me again. That was two.
Through it all, police watched over Taylor and her son, getting them to safety.
they were really heroes for us. They saved my life. They saved my son's life.
But she would later learn five officers lost their lives.
Of course I'm thankful that my babies are okay. But somebody's dad, this is my husband, isn't it?
Amid the chaos, one of her sons, Juwan, was alone on the streets.
A little boy ran up to me, and then he was like, can I stay with y'all? Because I don't know where my mom is. I lost my mom.
So Angie Wisner took care of Juwan.
This is the woman that was a hero to me.
They formed a bond that night.
I want to see him. I want to hug him. I want to cry. And I want to hug her. I do.
Today, her wish came true, reuniting with Juwan, then uniting with his mom. The story of a grateful family protected by so many angels. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Dallas.
And that is nightly news on this Sunday night. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow reporting from New York. I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.